what is your memory and what is your evaluation of relations between students, especially a prefect system, if it exists, existed in your school, school government, was it okay, or it was some problems with this?
Well, I think the on the whole, things were run quite well, and the great problem with the prefect system is that you're entrusting responsibility to people who are, in sort of general term, wholly unfitted to receive it. And but the prefects were sort of very much sort of kept in check as sort of minor bloodhounds, and at this school, and weren't sort of given great powers. I can't remember any sort of, I don't have any definite memories of conflict with prefects, at least not that I can. No very sort of definite memories of that sort of thing, but I mean there must have been occasions.
Not necessarily about yourself, maybe some observation. First of all, prefects means all senior sixth formers, or
no,
some of them.
No, what happened was that some sixth formers.
How many of them, and what kind of duties they have, and what kind of power?
Well, let's think. I would think about a third or something of the top four would be prefects. Their duties were, I think, that's odd. What would they have been?
To maintain order?
To maintain order under certain circumstances, I think particularly at lunch. And the school was slightly awkwardly placed, the main building was in one place, and lunch was another place, so people had to walk backwards and forwards after lunch, and prefects might perhaps, for example, have had to make sure that the school's done in a reasonably orderly, disciplined fashion.
The question of academic performance
was irrelevant, in fact.
No.
I mean, a certain kind of person was chosen as prefect, and I'm not that sort of person.
I see. So I guess that you never will.
I was never a prefect.
Okay. Now, if they observe some kind of disorder, should they report to principal, to teacher, or what? Was this considered as a proper thing for them?
Oh, yes. It's essentially, they did have a minor disciplinary powers of their own. In fact, when I first went to the school, they had the power of giving, requiring people to produce lines, which is you write out some sort of thing, I must not do this.
Yes, yes, I have heard about
10,
these lines.
15 or 20 times. When I was after a year that I was at the school, the prefect sort of suddenly went wild, and their maximum they were allowed to ask was 200, which is quite a lot. I mean, it takes quite a long time to produce 200 lines, I think. And they suddenly started giving everybody 200 lines on every occasion. And before very long, a parent of somebody who had been given 200 lines or something over by a prefect complained. And the prefect's powers were drastically curtailed, and until it was announced at the school that henceforth prefects would only be able to give 20 lines or something. And so, it was quite interesting noting how, by the abuse of their power, in this school, prefects, had lost.
Which, of course, is in favour of administration of the school.
It's a mark that the school was well run, that they reacted very promptly to presumably a parent's complaint. it's very different from the sort of major public schools, where one's impression is that a huge amount of discipline was almost entirely left in the senior boys'
yes.
hands.
And from the literature, my impression was that principal were interested very much to maintain authority of these people.
Yes.
Which is dangerous, more or less. All power is dangerous,
yes,
especially
yes, yes.
if it is not controlled, and especially
yes.
in hands of young people who could abuse, of course, very easily. But it was considered okay to report.
Oh yes. Well, for the prefect to do so, indeed. I would think that in normal if a prefect found something disorderly going on. It might very well be that he would report it.
About junior boys, probably not about his own mates.
Well, and it was quite interesting. I moved up into the form in which all the a number of my contemporaries were prefects. But essentially, it was no longer possible for them to exercise prefectly authority. They didn't have any authority over their contemporaries
as
prefects.
Yes, because of unwritten habits,
yes,
traditions.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes, yes.
Of course. And have they a right to apply physical power? To
the prefects didn't.
No.
But there was corporal punishment at the school.
In the school. What's the situation now? It is still...
I'm not sure. It has taken a long time for it to die in Britain, and I think it still exists in some schools. In this school, I'm not sure.
In America as well. In America, of course, all the system is decentralized. Everything is the responsibility of local school boards.
Yes.
There is no general regulations. And probably the same in Britain.
In Britain, it's individual school.
Yes, there is no legislation with this respect, what kind of
not as far as I know.
Discipline is admissible and what kind.
Not as far as I know.
But how harsh discipline was in the schools you have attended, first of all, comparatively. The preparatory school and this public school and before, where these punishments were harsher and more common?
Well, I would say definitely at the preparatory school punishments were harsher and more common. Partly that at the public school, essentially all discipline was exercised by the headmaster, also major discipline, so that it all exercised, although it was exercised out of sight, any sort of discipline that was exercised. I think also the headmaster may have been a liberal bent. And in fact, there may not have been any corporal punishment at my public school. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. You don't remember any cases?
I do not remember any cases. I think it was. It may also have been sort of done discreetly if it was done. In other words, the person was summoned to an interview and this happened, but it wasn't sort of announced.
But in preparatory school, this was common knowledge?
In preparatory school, there were two kinds of preparatory schools: the slipper, which is a gym shoe, and a cane, which is a sort of rod or something. And the cane was only exercised by the headmaster, and it was sort of dire punishment kept in reserve. But people, it was a punishment which was, I believe, exercised from time to time.
Which what? Which was?
Caning.
Caning, yes. And the second one?
The first one, the slipper, which is sort of more mild because it's, for physical reasons.
I see.
Wider area.
Also by prefect? By principal?
No, slippering was also done by masters from time to time.
Mm-hmm. But this has been done in public? Or?
And I think so, yes.
Both?
But not caning. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
And had you such misfortune?
I never had such misfortune.
But you have seen other people.
I have vague memories, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what was public opinion in this respect? I mean, children...
Except the system that I
had.
Yeah.
Had no doubts. And parents as well.
It was felt entirely natural. And as far as I know, parents didn't have strong objections. I mean, my overall view of the matter. Well, I mean, it must be difficult to exercise. I mean, in the end, one needs some sort of sanctions in running a school, and I'm not sure how effective entirely non-corporal sanctions are. Though they may be, I'm not sure. I mean, but European schools work very well, I think, without any sort of physical punishment. At least whether they work very well or not, they work.
There is some discussion in America in this respect. In Los Angeles, they recently have introduced, after some period of banishing, and probably this is, if it is applied not in extreme forms, maybe this is not so crucial thing. This is not, a way to drastically change by introducing this or by abolishing this.
Yeah.
To drastically change the atmosphere of school, for example.
I suspect that it probably doesn't make very much difference.
As in family, for example. There are families which spank children and there are families who do not spank, but this is not the greatest difference
sure.
between...
Sure, yes.
Of course. But... this kind of punishments have not played a very substantial role, say, in everyday school life. And I mean not only the fact, but discussion, fears, or teasing, or anything related to this.
I wouldn't, not as far as I remember, no. In fact, I mean, the most common form of punishment and rewards at the school was... a rather ineffective sort of kind of paper currency called stars and stripes. Stars were sort of a reward system. You were given one of these sort of big pink bits of paper, and sort of they accumulated in an account and sort of one of your reports at the end of the term. And stripes were sort of a negative thing.
Uh-huh. And they have cancelled each other.
And they cancel each other in a certain sense. But I mean, also the total is important. The individual totals sort of exist. And, I mean, it's a surprising, they had a sort of general effect, I mean, the sort of way that any sort of paper currency is sort of generally accepted, even if it's completely worthless. And although some people may have sort of realised that nothing very dreadful would happen if you were given a stripe, nevertheless, it's an entirely sort of...
But was it impossible to trade?
No sort of trading of this sort of currency. No, I mean, it was a mark against you.
Yes. Yeah.
At the end of term, if it was discovered that you had had, sort of 15 stripes against you, that would mean that you've been generally disobedient and so forth. But that would be all it would mean. So some people must have realised that, as long as the punishment for doing something was a stripe, essentially that meant there was no punishment. But they didn't seem to be very common. So that the most common form of punishment was this kind of a sort of non-physical punishment, which I suspect actually was sort of produced by some sort of society for reducing corporal punishment in school or something like that. It has that sort of feel about it.
But people who somebody told me, I don't remember, among Englishmen, that in this corporal punishment, the main part was not physical pain, but the fact that this has been done rather formally. The principal told the pupil, you must report, so this was some kind of suspense and something like that. In contrast to, say, as a mother could just spank and that's all. So this was also the case. It was some kind of ritual or not.
Well, I think so. In the sense that the more severe of the two physical punishments that came was sort of attended by some. One had the impression of some sort of dread, you know, sort of dready sort of ritual. You know, the person would be told to report to the principal at such and such a time, and so on. So it was all sort of done, you know, sort of privately and so forth. So I mean, one could see a sort of you know, surrounding the thing with this sort of aura of horror and, well, horror is an exaggeration, but sort of dread and foreboding and so forth.
It's of course very important, just what kind of historical tradition exists in all these respects. Because I can tell you what in Russia.
So that. Littlewood was around when I was a student, but he died before I returned as a fellow. So I think I had some vague memories of sort of seeing him, but not really anything more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, one talks to, I can easily talk to people in college who knew Littlewood quite well, and sort of hear various sort of stories.
You can tell
about Littlewood and so
on. One or two stories if you want.
Of course, looking at Littlewood through eyes of people who are not mathematicians, but just fellows of their
college
and so forth. Stories such as, well, after you've eaten in on the high table in Cambridge College, the two possibilities to open to you. Most people will go downstairs and have coffee, go back home or whatever. But you can also go upstairs, and it's sort of physically raining. You come out on the staircase, and you either go downstairs or you go upstairs. You go upstairs to a place called the Combination Room, where you have we'll sit round and have port. And
yes, I attended once.
In Trinity.
Yes.
You remember. Littlewood is very fond of doing that, and in fact, in his later years at Henry VIII, he would do this every evening. And
you mean combination of?
Yes, a drink, port or Madeira, whatever. And, such stories as he's saying to one fellow, you should try having a glass of port followed by a glass of Madeira. You will find it makes you drunk in an entirely new kind of way. And, in his later years, he believed himself to be very short of money. It's slightly a mystery to me how he could have been short of money, because you presume he had a professor's pension, which, even if not enormous by today's standards, because professor salaries were quite low in Britain for a lot of the time when he was a professor, and so his pension may not have been that big, must nevertheless have been quite reasonable. And as somebody living in college, he would have had almost no expenses at all. Not quite, but I mean, apart from clothes and lunch, just a few heating bills and so forth. He had no expenses. But nevertheless, he believed himself to be very short of money. And in fact, he did go and spend a month every year in an expensive hotel in Switzerland. So he may in fact have been short of money. He apparently had no sort of feeling for this sort of thing. So he apparently sold a lot of the furniture in his rooms and also his books and so forth. Because he believed he was about to become bankrupt. I can't remember how it could have happened, but some sort of change in rules or whatever, or change in circumstances. It used to be, it has always been the case that the person who sort of took the head of the table at the port took this free of charge. Now, some factor or other meant that they must have raised the charge of port or something, and Littlewood decided that he was no longer able to afford it. So, on the days when he wasn't going to be the person sitting at the head of the table, he would be seen sort of walking sadly back to his room. And someone said, you know, this was one of the saddest sights he'd ever seen. So they, in fact, changed the rules. I mean, this was typically sort of Cambridge way, not to say that Littlewood could always have free port, but to say that the oldest fellow present, or the most senior fellow present, could always have free port. And in fact, practice, this was going to be Littlewood.
But you probably have heard a lot of things about Hardy also.
Not so much, because in fact only about 10 or so, only a fairly small number of the fellows of the college, only among the among the older ones, would they actually remember Hardy.
The only thing I was told in connection with my invitation to give Hardy lecture, that knew about the source of the funds, that he was a bachelor, that he donated all his money after his death to London Mathematical Society for this purpose, to arrange each 2 years, I think, or how often these Hardy lectures, that's more or less. But
I do remember one story about Hardy, which is told by a fellow called Hampson, who was a lawyer and is also a Roman Catholic. And Hardy, I think, used to tease him about his religion. And one day, Hardy wanted to play bowls. There's a bowling green behind the one part of the college where one can play bowls, and Hardy was very keen at this, in fact devised a scoring system that's used, and so forth. And so Hardy said, you know, come on, play bowls. And Hampson said no, and sort of Hardy pushed and pushed and pushed. And finally Hampson said, well, if you'll give me a signed piece of paper saying that you'll never again tease me or whatever about my religion, then I will play. And so Hardy did so, and Hampson kept the piece of paper.
Thank you very much.